Poetry makes some noise today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Aubrey Barnes is a poet who practices roaring rhetoric. We'll have a quiet talk with him about that today on Scribble. Roaring rhetoric, that's a powerful title.
Yeah, I always have to go with the alliterations for sure. Yeah. Always makes it makes it more potent for some reason, just when you add alliterations. I don't know what it is. But
how'd you come up with this?
I came up with it about 4 years ago when I kind of first started getting involved in a spoken word, which is kind of an art of like performance poetry, as people call it. One of my friends, my friend and I always performed at East Village Cafe, which is now The Brew in Davenport. We did a lot of stuff with their open mic. Until they kicked us out, because they did a lot of stuff with the comedians, and it kind of just always kind of didn't contrast that well. So my friend pushed me into starting my own open mic, which at first was like, I don't think I could ever do that. Like, I don't know how to start something, the marketing and all that. But he pushed me to do it, and I just came up with the name Roaring Rhetoric, just out of the blue, just kind of just thinking about names and all that. And just thinking about something that could give people who are local poets, writers, and just even songwriters a place to kind of like have the place of sharing their art and a place where they're first starting off and kind of growing their art as well and growing the community as well. So it started about 4 years ago, like I said, and we've just been going strong with it now. We start with like an audience of maybe 3-4, like you do with any kind of open mic. It starts really small, but you're never really worried about the numbers. But now we have audience crowds about 50 or so people. So
when
it's we have it on a bi-monthly basis, the first Saturday of every other month. So our next one is actually April 7th. It's coming up in the next week, actually.
This is going to be on the air on April 14th.
So we
just missed it.
Oh, good deal. Yep. Just missed it. But yeah.
And where do these take place?
Roaring Rhetoric takes place at Connect Coffee House, which is a coffee shop in North Park Mall, right outside of Sears, inside the mall. We've had that. They've just housed us for the last 4 years. They've been really gracious for us. And that just a good – it has just a good atmosphere for poetry reading and just music, so we've stuck with it for that.
So the next one is going to be April, May, June.
Yep, in June, whatever the first Saturday in June is. Yep.
The first Saturday in June.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, it goes from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., but we're kind of very loose on the time, so whenever it ends, it ends. They're pretty cool with that, so it starts at 6 p.m. usually, though.
Roald, how is it important – why is it important for poets to be able to speak?
Why? Because I think I agree with Shelley. Poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world. Mm. I mean, they do get things done, right?
Yeah.
And what I'm interested in with Aubrey is why it has to be roaring.
Yeah.
why can't you be more quiet, like Emily Dickinson and things like
that? Yeah.
No, I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Is this an age that demands roaring?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about it, I kind of just think about my journey and just my introduction to poetry altogether.
Well, let's start there.
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up in a household that was very kind of just tight-knit and very conservative, so I didn't know that music existed outside of, like, hymns and gospel music.
Okay.
So it wasn't until I was, like, in junior high, seventh grade, when I used to come home early from school and my mom was still at work, I found certain news like TV channels that had like music and like hip hop and rap were some of those channels. BET was one of them. Was a big like introduction to poetry from my cultural like from that culture for me. And so artists like Nas, Busta Rhymes, guys like who really had like very poetic like writings, very witty writings, but also like their inflections, the way they projected their art, like was powerful in and of itself with that too. So when I kind of just paralleled that to roaring for me, art has a power in and of itself, like just anybody who can just write and creatively write something and kind of like create a truth in a very poetic rhetoric kind of way, like that's powerful. And I think there's a more of a power that kind of comes out of it with the way that you kind of project it or kind of roar it, you know? So like, I just picked the books here, like the poems in my book right here. Like somebody could read this poem and be like impacted by it, right?
So would a successful evening for you over at the Connect Coffee House be something where everybody got up and roared and there was no audience?
Yeah, well, for me, yeah. I think like the reason why I created Roaring Rhetoric was to give a place for people who had a voice but didn't.
And does that include every human being?
Oh, everybody, yeah. Every human being. Like, there's no age barrier. There's no like.
Coleridge is wrong when he said poets are born, not made, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody's a poet.
Exactly. Everybody
or
has
can
a little,
be.
Everybody has some aesthetics in them, for
why,
sure.
Why isn't everybody?
I think just because I think when I think about it, poetry, when people think about reading publicly, I mean, public speaking is like one of those things that's like super nerve-wracking, yeah, and like scares the pants off of you. Like,
right,
it's something that you just don't think you can do. And like just being able to share art, vulnerable art that's created in place of vulnerability with an audience, like that's a scary thing, you know? So I think a lot of people kind of like backdrop from it because it's just such a – it's an intense moment. But it's – I think it's good in the intensity that is, it's good because like that intensity like opens people's hearts, their minds – and kind of like opens up a broad, more broad world to them as well.
Yeah, you know, when kids are young, mm-hmm, they react to music, they react to rhyme,
mm-hmm,
they love rhyme.
Yeah.
And, you know, my kids used to take a word like care and then go through the alphabet, bear, care, dare. You had to be careful what words they picked. But They love rhyme and they love poetry. And somewhere along the way, I think we beat it out of them. I don't know how it happens. It's kids sing, their voices have a ringing quality, and they lose that after a while. Many do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, what's wrong with holding on to those things?
Well, you know, E. E. Cummings is the one that said, in our culture, we don't grow up, we grow down.
Mm.
Right, into silence, into imitators of ourselves. Kids have a natural quality.
Yeah.
So when is the work that you do when you get up in front of a mic, is that all impromptu, or have you written it down and memorized it? Or
yeah, my work, all the work that I do at mic is like majority just written down and memorized. Like that's how I usually do a lot of mine. Like that part's important to me, just because I think. Like I said, I think writing always will have a power in and of itself, whether you get up there and read off of something. But for me, like when I'm able to just like memorize the words that I say and kind of live in the words, like I kind of embody the words that I write in that time.
Do you ever get up there and start with no words? Just let the words. I recall in the 60s, a couple times I went to hear Allen Ginsberg, and what he would do, he would get up in front of the mic, and he always had a flute player with him, and the flute player would start improvising on the flute. And maybe in a minute or two, suddenly he would start speaking. And his idea was that once you've written it down, it's dead, right? He wanted to do it impromptu, right? But you do write your...
Yeah, yep. I write all mine and just memorize them.
Let's have an example.
Just one that I've written?
Sure.
Okay, cool. I'll do Black Like Me is probably like one that is like most liked by people, which is funny because I wrote that out of just like... keeping it to myself, but like when I kind of shared it, people like loved it. But Black Like Me is one of them, so it goes something like this. Let me tell you the fact about myself that almost everyone feels the need to remind me. I am black. I'm so black that I make Michael Black's son not seem so black, son. I'm so black that in a game of laser tag, I should be permitted to keep my eyes open and teeth showing, otherwise I'd be cheating. I'm so black that you would swear that I'm a vampire, because when I'm in photos with no flash, all you see is floating clothes. I'm so black that my white teammate in college was stricken in fear at my appearance, but when he heard my speech was politically correct and my posture stood erect, he breathed out in a great calm, because it was evident that I was white. I can keep going. Is that good?
Go a little more, yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, cool. I'm so white that I make Carlton look like Tupac. I'm so white that I'm mistaken Malcolm X's name for Malcolm X. I'm so white that my all-white friend from an all-white college within an all-white city once told me, Aubrey, you are not like the black people I see on TV. When I go to the gym to play basketball, people run to me for a challenge, leaving Victor with an easily scored 21 to my hard-toiled 16 and say to me, you must not have inherited the genes. So I am black, but I'm white. Or maybe people are just colorblind. Shutter blinds close to any sunny possibility of a no-label society. Globular organs shrouded with stereotypical presumptions, assumptions derived from contrived corruptions. Forming these ideas of acting black and acting white and making them all right, well, it isn't all right if you're black acting white or white acting black. Well, it's okay, but just know we're going to give you a hard time. When you forget your belt at home and your pants sag a little, we're going to say you're dressing black. But when it's around your waist and nicely fit, we're going to say that you're dressing white. Kind of like how those religious leaders, those Pharisees, judge good and evil by what they perceive with their eyes instead of examining within the heart that lies. When Elohim said there's no Jew nor Gentile, nor male nor female, I believe if he stood in the midst of our color-coded community, he would say there's no black nor white. I'm exactly what I'm meant to be. An oddity and a comedy, laughable because giggling only makes sense of something that does not make sense. A black acting white, or white acting black, it's an oxymoron that's prone to give minds, prone to labels, panic attacks. I mean, think about it. When was the last time you went to the ice cream parlor anticipating all the flavors to be the same? Never. That would be lame. But like a world full of agents, trapped within the Matrix, the Neos bring change, something different, outside the norm, so I will forever say that I am the paint splashes along the padded room that can't be cleaned by a Swiffer rag or broom, you see. I am what I am because I am said I am, so you see. It's not that I'm whiter than you, or you're blacker than me, but we're the same. Human beings bearing the same beautiful image. So in that case, I'm white like you, and you're black like me.
Whoa, that is terrific.
Thank
not
you,
merely
appreciate
good,
it.
That is terrific.
You must inspire other people to, in the audience to get up and...
Yeah, you can say I'm the little goad that kind of pushes people, I guess.
Yeah.
Pushes them to kind of get up on the mic and do the same.
Just last week I was talking about Amy Chua's book, Tribal Politics, and this whole business of, you know, why people fall back on almost animal instincts and insist on everybody being the same in my group. It's not just that we should pave over differences, we should celebrate the differences.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's, but yeah, you're doing, you are a dangerous young man.
I'll take that. Definitely.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
who is your audience these evenings over at the coffee shop?
The audience is actually very, very diverse, which is awesome. I mean, I think poetry just brings a diverse audience like all together from what I've seen, like, As of the last like 3-4 years, but there's like people my age, people who are way older and wiser than me as well, people who are black, people who are white, like people who come from different religious affiliations as well. Like the coffee shop is like more of a Christian coffee shop, but a lot of the people are just of different diversity when it comes to their thought process and that. So like it's a very diverse crowd, which leads to awesome conversation after when different people perform or just how eclectic like the lineups usually are for people who do the open mic. So.
The book that you carry, what is it?
This book is called Unfinished. It's a poetry book I published, self-published last year, December 26th of last year. But it's just, I think, 3-4 years worth of just work that I've written just poetically. And for me, what was kind of like different from just like a just kind of like a chat book was obviously like it's a lot. It's like
yeah,
50.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of poems. But each poem, I kind of explain kind of the story that kind of led to the poem. So I kind of give people kind of the peek inside like Aubrey's brain of like why certain poems came to be and like what kind of thought provoked certain poems. So I have like different sections from like think like poems on just like personal things that I've personal conversations I've had like with certain individuals or just things from like my perceptions of and experiences of things with, on injustice and all that. So it's just an eclectic version of Aubrey at that time for sure.
You know, growing up down south, I used to marvel at how people did not seem able to get inside the minds of people who were of a different color. It was very frustrating, and I was anxious to leave the South because of that. Mm-hmm. But I thought the difference between black and white is skin color. The difference between rich and poor is money. Mm-hmm. There's just as much talent in any group, and there's just as much indolence. People talk about folks who are black and poor must be indolent. I think, well, have you seen the very wealthy? They're as indolent as anybody you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And we're all the same.
Yeah.
And we just have so much trouble pushing down that very primitive instinct.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, this country is supposed to be dedicated to that, but boy, we're having trouble now.
Mm-hmm.
We're having real trouble.
Yeah, we kind of get stuck in our own boxes.
Yeah, that's right. And if you sit in a separate box, you don't get anything done. You don't get to see anybody. You don't. Yeah. There's no richness in life.
Mm-hmm.
So, why is poetry a better way of saying something than a lecture?
A lecture. That's a good question. I kind of think about it like this. I just think about also just when I say this, I kind of just have in mind just like the generation that I'm kind of growing up
right.
with, I guess, and the ones behind. But if I go up to like I work as like a paraeducator, and I worked in the junior highs for a little while too. And if I went up to one of my students and asked them to recite lyrics from so and so, like a rapper or a songwriter they know, they'd be able to do that perfectly and know every word without like a skip of a beat. If I told them to recite maybe a politician and what they said at maybe like a open forum or something, they'd be like, okay, who is this politician? And I don't know, like, I don't know anything like that, like anything of what you're talking about. So I think art in and of itself, what kind of like deviates it from the plain formal giving of just like persuasion just given by word is that it speaks a truth. It speaks a truth in a unique manner that can resonate with all people. I think
it does seem to have a kind of power that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you pace it well. You pace it really well. Normally, you speak very rapidly, but there are times when you slow down. Dun, dun.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you're catching flashes of rhyme all the way through it, mm-hmm. I think makes it.
Right.
More arresting. I'm strong on rhyme, Roald.
Right. Well, and so is Aubrey. Yeah, I think so, too. I think hearing you read it, an average person reading that same poem would take him a long time to learn where to pause the way you paused and stop.
Yeah.
But those are really critical to the way you've said things and what you've said, too. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the whole business of poetry out loud and roaring rhetoric and all these forums for people to speak
mm-hmm.
and encouraging people to use poetry. I can't argue with any of that because I think that is, you know, the more we are able to talk and communicate, the better off we are.
Mm-hmm.
And if we find a powerful means of communication, and poetry is really powerful. We keep thinking, when we talk about poetry, we think about Wordsworth and, a Byron or something. But poetry is alive in its own age, in its own voice, its own time. And you can't just fix it to one particular period. God knows I'm fanatically in love with Shakespeare because of the not only the beauty of the language and the imagery and but the powerful ideas and so on, but in modern urban poetry and rap and so on, there's a lot of rap that's just junk.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
but there's a lot of poetry that's just junk too.
Do the people who come up to your open mic on those evenings are all of them roaring?
No, and I mean that's the beauty of it too. Like. For me, I guess I look at roaring in a very broad way, like
right.
in and of itself. Like, I mean, the fact that you get up there, like you're roaring, no matter like
right.
whatever, like you're
right.
the one speaking,
right.
your voice is the one that people are listening
right.
to.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, a lot of them read. A lot of them like are very like quiet and timid in their persona. A lot of them, some people sing, some people rap, and some people are a lot more projecting with their voice. Like, I feel like all of that is just is all roaring. So,
Do you think once every other month is adequate? Should you be should you have a more frequent forum?
Well, for me, like, my first because we used to have Roaring Rhetoric on a monthly basis. I think like 2 years ago, and I think for me, just always looking just the work that kind of came behind that, with it just first getting started, like me having to reach for different people, do all this, like it kind of gave me a little bit more time to kind of like take a breather, kind of pre-plan how it was going to go. I'm not that it goes like in any kind of formal, like organized way. I like the chaos of it, but mm-hmm. like it kind of gave me breathing time, and it also kind of like gave it a little bit more brevity, I think, too. And with that as well, like I said, I've also been a privilege to help with starting other open mics in the area too. So with now Roaring Rhetoric being this bi-monthly thing, the months that we don't have Roaring Rhetoric, we always have something else going on. Like, for example, the Moline Library, about 3 months ago, I just helped plan another open mic there. And this goes to just show how much I love alliteration, I guess. The open mic over there is called Wits and Words. It's at the Moline Library at Java Lab in
Well, your name came to us because you did something at the Unitarian Church, in fact.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
With Audrey Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Great person, actually. Yeah. Because
she's next.
Right.
Oh, good deal. Yeah. She's open to see next. Good deal. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's, I applaud what you're doing. I think that's great. You know, you have to work to make a living.
Oh, yeah.
But I found out, you know, for me, the Genesi skill, couldn't make a dime on that, but it enriched my life more than anything else I may have done. But I worked in the meantime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It'd be nice if you could just work at Roaring Rhetoric, wouldn't you?
Yeah. No, seriously. I mean, and that was just kind of the struggle of it, too, just like being somebody who, like, I do a lot of stuff with the art community, obviously, and, like, I do a lot of stuff with, like, musicians and all that who do it, like, full-time. Like, their full-time is, like, music and all that. And just kind of, like, for me, coming to the realization that, like, I'm not that. And, like, with, like, poetry, like, you got to be able to just, like, step out. You got to have this balance of, like, knowing, okay, like, I need money, so I need to, like, work a regular job. But, like, it'd be – you got to kind of have that balance where it says, like, money's not – you're doing this for more than, like, a paycheck. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Well, Aubrey, keep it up. I must say,
thank you.
I think both of us are quite impressed with your work.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
Aubrey you Barnes, the first Saturday in June is your next opportunity mm-hmm. at Roaring Rhetoric, and it's at what coffee house?
Connect Coffee House.
At what time?
6 p.m.
Okay.
6 p.m.
And that's next to?
Next to Sears inside North Park Mall.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Aubrey Barnes.
Right, thank you.
Wow, that was something.
Yeah, I had a whole list of about 15 questions. You know, I was prepared to ask the poet questions like, "Is April a good month for Poetry Month?" The minute he started reading, it all went out the window because it was all beside the point. Right?
These
are sort of academic questions that I might ask in front of a class.
Yeah,
I'm glad to see that poetry is in good hands these days. And is alive and well.
He is a very impressive young man. He truly is.
Yeah. I mean, I could have sat and listened the whole half hour just having him read. He reads well, too.
Having heard some rap, you know.
And that was all memorized. He didn't read a word of it.
But, you know, you think of rap these days.
Well, this isn't rap.
I know, it isn't.
It owes a little bit to rap.
It gives you a bad image, but what he did is superb.
Unbelievable.
It is exactly the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And if that is a form of rap, I'm all for it. But that rap is more rhythmic, and quite often it's bad poetry. But this was it was an organic thing. It really was. It had its own shape, impact. Just great. Just great. Speaking of just great, how are you in the book bag?
Well, I have a book. Since this is Poetry Month, I thought that I would begin by recommending Mary Oliver's A Poetry Handbook. Mary Oliver is one of my favorite contemporary poets. She's won a Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award. The Poetry Handbook is a short book, 120 pages, and it very simply, in Mary Oliver's typical way, but with very good examples, sort of explains, if you're interested in writing poetry or if you're interested in learning to read it better, this is really a good book to start with. Nothing is going to intimidate you. She goes through sound, alliteration, rhyme, assonance, you know, and all of those things. Her chapter on free verse and why free verse started coming around in the 1930s is one of the best examples of descriptions of free verse and what it is. And obviously, she agrees with most poets. Free verse is a bad name for free. Free verse is not free, mm-hmm. right? Everybody thinks free verse is anything goes. And instead, she prefers the word organic.
It's like in the word free jazz. You tell me about free jazz and my ears curl.
Yeah.
Because there's no organization. It's just whatever you have in mind with no relationship to the other musicians around you. But free verse, you're a great partisan for free verse.
I'm a great partisan for free verse, but free verse that in which, you know, here's a line, for instance. John Crow Ransom wrote a poem about a 12-year-old neighbor who died, and it begins talking about how lively she was. There was such speed in her little body.
Mm-hmm.
He can't change that around, right, and say, look at how speedy that becomes. There was such speed, and then in her little body.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right word and the right rhythm and the right accent in the right place.
When a line comes along that is dropped from heaven, you recognize
right.
it. Right. And it's just, I'm amazed that people have the power to do that.
The other thing about Mary Oliver, and for those of you interested in writing, is a chapter on revision. She says, after about 40 or 50 revisions of my poems, I begin to see some possibility in it. You know, I mean, poetry is work, and
it
you
is.
Work at it, and it doesn't just sort of happen automatically.
Yeah, I wrote something recently, and when I read it, I thought, you know, if I could hack away about 60% of this,
right.
I might have something.
Right.
But it's that's why I'm not a writer, because it's too much work. It's it really does takes attention. And it takes commitment. It takes time.
The other thing she's particularly good at is, what's the difference between a stone and a rock?
Mm-hmm.
Right? They are not the same.
No.
And the difference is the sound. Rock sounds like a rock, doesn't it? And the stone sounds like a stone. Shakespeare was wrong when he said, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. It wouldn't.
No, well, he was poking fun at the Rose Theater.
I know, I'm sorry. Sorry I made fun of Shakespeare.
Yeah, you watch it there, Phil.
Oh, geez.
Well, that's all the time you get. That's it. I'm Don Wotan with Roll Tweet. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another poet on Scribble.